Welcome everybody to the Quill and Query podcast. This is episode 11. We're in the double digits now. My name is Brandon Hall. I'm joined as always by my wonderful co-host, Ash. Ash, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Brandon?
Pretty good, pretty good. Just a busy summer week like always, but
you know it.
We're getting
never
through
ends.
It.
But, we are.
Yeah, we have lots of fun topics to talk about this week. Some of those are, we're going to talk about serial fiction, special editions, and co-authoring, and lots of other stuff. Even some things we might need to move to next week because we have lots of topics. But before we get into all that, we're going to do our reading check-in. Ash, what are you currently reading?
I am still currently working through my arc of Lady Macbeth by Ava Reed. I haven't read anything else this week. I've been doing book stuff, or writing rather.
Yeah.
But still pretty good so far. What are you reading?
Very cool. Well, I am taking a break from, the First Law trilogy, which I have been reading for a long time now. I am reading Tevinter Nights, which is a Dragon Age short story anthology. I know I have a lot of Dragon Age or fellow Dragon Age fans that follow me here in my mutuals. So trying to catch up on the lore for the games that I missed out on before the new one comes out later this year, and maybe getting some ideas for other anthology stuff, but we'll see.
Ooh. Don't tease me now.
Also, just a podcast update for everyone who listens to us. I think Ash is, we're good to share this. We're going to be going live at 5:30 instead of 6 o'clock. So if you're used to joining us at 6 p.m. Eastern, we'll be on at 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. So yeah, we're going to be moving it up just a little bit.
And if anyone's mad about that, you can let us know, but I don't think it's that big of a deal. It's just 30 minutes, so we should be all right.
Yeah, and as always, if you're not able to make the live, you can catch us on all of your favorite podcast platforms. That's RSS, Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts. If there's one that you see that we're not on, let me know, and I will see if I can get us submitted so you can stick to your favorite platform. But yeah. That's where you can find us. And so next up, we have no audience questions this week. And we do have one indie release to spotlight. Or actually, am I missing one? I think there was
another one. No, that's it.
That's it? Okay.
Oh, there were two. You're right. Yeah, there was one we might have missed earlier this month. So we can, I can add that in as well.
Okay.
Just so we don't miss anybody. No one likes getting left out, you know? let's see. Okay. So on the 9th of June, we had ID Marie's The Prince of Paradise released.
Yes.
That's the one. And then this week, we have Caroline Lane's A Hex on Honeysuckle Lane. So get ready for that to come out. And congrats to those two authors for releasing their books.
Yep, very exciting. I know I see a lot of their posts on my For You page and my friends list. So
yeah,
very cool to see them publishing books. Yeah, I think we can move into our publishing and business topics for the week. I know that's what we still call this segment, but the two are kind of blending in together a little bit at this point. but I think this first topic is yours, so I'm actually gonna let you bring this one. The Ippy Awards,
sounds
is that
good.
Correct?
That is the Ippy Awards. For those of you who don't know, the Ippies are the Independent Publishers Awards. And I think they were released finally this week, at least the winners. If not this week, last week, but I think it was this week. So I figured I'd highlight a few winners, one of who is a big book talker here and I am mutuals with. But first, we have a few on the list. So I'm going to go through a couple golds and a different gold winners in different genres. So Samantha Shannon's A Day of Fallen Night won gold in fantasy. No one is surprised there. I think I haven't read it yet, but she is a thick, thick lady. So, but it's good. I mean, I really liked Priory of the Orange Tree. David Visser's Darkness in a Sea of Stars won the gold in the sci-fi genre. Andrew F. Sullivan's The Marigold won gold in the horror genre. Miriam, and I'm going to butcher her last name, I'm so sorry, but Miriam Perbaz, So sorry again. Isolated Incident won gold in multicultural fiction. And then our own TikTok friend BC Fajan won silver for her ebook, A Crown of Ash and Silver, in the ebook romance and erotica genre. So congrats to all winners. You should definitely check out the entire list if you are at a loss of what to read next. There are so many genres and so many books that won. And those are great to pick from, and those are all independent publishers. So woo-hoo-hoo.
Very cool.
Yee-haw.
Well, yeah, congrats to all those winners. I was not aware that was happening, so nice to see. And some of those are
Me.
actually on my some of those are on my TBR, so
Are they
I
really?
guess I
Which
made
ones?
some good choices. A Day of Fallen Night is on there, but I can't remember. Do I need to read Priory of the Orange Tree first, or is that a prequel? Because I keep getting confused.
It's a prequel, and it came out after, though, the Priory of the Orange Tree. So I
Okay.
think you can technically read them in either order. It doesn't really
Yeah.
matter, but A Day of Fallen Night is technically the prequel. It's like how everything happened from
Okay,
the
gotcha.
Priory novel. Yeah.
That just gave me a topic idea, but I don't want to bring it up here.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, that's very cool. Congrats to all those winners. Nice to see
Awesome.
some book talk representation there.
Yes, I agree.
All right, next is one of mine. We have serial fiction and subscription-based publishing models. This is something I've seen really just super recently, actually, with some of our fellow author friends on TikTok kind of exploring. And I just wanted to kind of. Oh, sorry, my live studio went black for a minute. Yeah, I just wanted to
That's okay.
get your thoughts on this publishing model. So from what I've seen, it's there's a lot of different approaches here, but the most common one I see is like the an author will set up a subscription page, and in return for the fee, it's either weekly or monthly, depending on their output, you'll pay the subscription, and then you'll get like a chapter of a story. Sometimes it's like unrelated content, and sometimes it's like a novel almost being published in pieces. And I thought this was interesting because I've thought about like doing something like that in the past. I just don't think I have the writing speed up to ready for that yet. But I've also never really read fiction that way, so I was curious to see if you and anyone in chat has any thoughts on engaging with stories that way. First, from a reader's perspective, and then I guess also we can dive into like what you think about it as a writer as well.
Yeah. No, so it's like when I saw this on our list for today, I was just very surprised this was kind of coming back up as a thing, because it kind of has a, I'm about to pull out my history degrees here, but it definitely harkens back to like the old penny presses, and like a lot of stories in old newspapers used to be serialized. So like a lot of the greats, and I'm blanking, but like a lot of them would release their novels either weekly or monthly, and then that would be like the talk of the town, for that week or for however long. So the fact that it's coming back and like being it's recurring now even in the digital era, I find to be kind of cool. I have not seen anyone I follow doing this, but it is a really interesting way to, like you said, not only boost the income but just ensure engagement, right? And I wonder how much of that is the point, right? If you, it's like, you have the cat and mouse game. Well, I'm going to give you a little bit and I'm going to chase after it and then whatever. I find it really interesting. I don't think I could do that only because the podcast is the only thing I'm consistent with in my life. That's a lot of, it's genuinely like a lot of work, because then you have to edit, you have to make sure it is, consistently, at least, yeah, like the format is consistent throughout. It is an It's a lot of work. Also, apologies for my s mouth stumbling today. I'm very tired,
No
but
worries.
I think it is interesting. It does also remind me of fan fiction a bit. Obviously, in fan fiction world, nothing is transactional, right? You don't pay or anything like that. But I like it. Let's try it. Let's bring it back. I think it is a really fun way, especially if it's not necessarily the book itself, but it's like a novella or it's, side character stories or origin stories for other characters. I think that is a really fun way to keep people interested after you've published your book, or entice people to eventually read your book. If you say, the first character gets 5 chapters, I'm going to release it over the next month, just whatever. And it lets people be interested and stay interested in your work. So yeah, I kind of like it. What are your thoughts?
From a reader's perspective, I think it just depends on if I'm interested enough in the stories to engage with it that way, but I'm not directly opposed to it or anything at all. I think it's a cool thing to explore. Everything is almost subscription based these days, or has a subscription option, so I don't see the harm in exploring that with your writing. I think as a kind of like you said, as a writer, I don't think I could do it personally, just because one, the consistency, and you would definitely have to have a consistent pace, because people are paying on a consistent basis for that. So you have to provide the content that they're paying for. And also, I feel like when I'm writing, I do go back and edit like older chapters a lot, and I feel like you would lose
Yeah,
that,
me too.
because like, oh, chapter one was already published and I'm on 8, so I can't go back
Yeah.
and change this thing. So that would scare me a little bit, because you really have to
Yeah.
be conscious about some writing decisions, as a little more than you would
Yeah.
usually be. So, but yeah, I think it's ultimately something that your audience will tell you if they see value in it or not, and as long as
Right.
you're providing the content for the subscription, I think it's a fair business practice. And I think you put an interesting follow-up in there, didn't you?
I did. So my follow-up to Brandon's question here is, if an author, like your favorite author for you would be J.R.R. Martin, did something like a serial fiction or subscription-based publishing model. And I put this in there because I'm interested. We talk a lot about indie self-published space, but if a big author did this, what would you pay slash would you be interested? And is that even appealing, or do you want it all at once from somebody that big?
That's a tough question, because with Martin, we've been starved of content for a while, so I feel like with him specifically, I would take any type of content. If he came out and published The Winds of Winter chapter by chapter, and it was like $5 per chapter, I'd probably be the first person in line. But no, I
I
think
feel that
it
way about Patrick Rothfuss too. I'm like, we've been waiting on the third book for like 11, 12 years at this point or something like that. And I'm like, if I got the ability to pay $5 a month to see this novel slowly come out, I would pay that money 100%.
If it's an author that I'm, really invested into like that, I think I'd be totally fine, as long as the fee, I feel like, represents the value. I'd be okay with that. If it was something egregious, like $100 a month, then yeah, that would be difficult for
Or
me
even,
to justify, but.
yeah, I was gonna say, or even something like $20 or 25. To me, I'm like, that's a book in of itself, right? Like, that's how much I'm going to be paying for a book. So if you think about it, like, let's say, for we'll just keep with Martin for a second. Like, Martin's got like 40 chapters, right? Or more sometimes in his books. And that's like 40 times five. It is kind of, I mean, you're paying a lot of money over time. So hi, Nicole. No worries. We are still just kind of getting started on our first big topic. But yeah, like, you do have to justify that a little bit. So it's like, if it's a couple bucks here and there, that's fine. But if you're asking me to pay like five or more, I'm like, how long is this going to take? And also, how many months? And therefore, I'm paying like up to $200 eventually to get this book, or like get this whole story to me. Anyway, so it's an interesting topic.
Yeah, subscriptions are an interesting business model, because there's a lot of factors to consider. I
It
think
is, yeah.
ultimately my preferred way of consuming books is still to just buy the book Same
Yeah,
goes for
binge
write. Same
it.
goes for writing the book as well. I'd rather just write the whole thing and get it out. But
Yep.
again, not totally opposed to the serial fiction or subscription model. Also, thank you, Nicole
Yeah.
and Priscilla, for the likes and the follow. Welcome to the live.
Welcome. Also, I'm going to be obnoxious 1 second and open my can of seltzer water. So, 1 second.
That's okay.
All right, we're good.
Sound effects. Okay, so on the topic of book consumerism, we've got special editions up next. I know this can be a little bit divisive on Book Talk. Sometimes people have very strong opinions on special editions and things like that. So, let's start with as a reader, where do you stand on special editions? Do you buy them? Are you one of those people who's like first in line for the pretty cover that's limited edition, or are you someone who couldn't be bothered?
Okay, so I'm a bit in the middle on this one, and I'll explain. If it is a book series that I have just adored, so for example, one of my top favorites is The Folk of the Air. Nicole's gonna be like, duh, again, obviously, but Holly Black, Folk of the Air. So when Holly Black released a special edition collection where each page was like her annotations of going through the book itself and like notes that she wrote while she was writing were included in this like very like gilded edge collection, hardback, very nice, all gold, whatever. If it's a series like that where I'm getting like an additional piece of content, there was art in there that hadn't ever been put in there before, plus the author's notes, etc. I'll only buy it if it's like an author that I'm obsessed with or it's a series that I like actually adore. I do not just kind of holistically. Can you hear me? Okay, cool. It made a noise for a second, so I wanted to make sure. So yeah, that's my threshold. I have to love it already. I'm not someone who's going to buy a special edition if I don't already adore the author. The downside to that is that I have recently bought a special edition from an author whose new series I was super excited to read, and I just really didn't like the book. And that was a confirmation for me to just like read the book from the library first or get it secondhand, and then decide if you want the special edition. So that's where I draw the line. I know some people will just like wholesale buy a special edition if they see it looks pretty. And it might go really well with their aesthetic. That's where I am kind of like, if you already have 17 copies of the same series and they're all different, that's when I'm kind of like, is the author just ask? It's kind of like, no offense to Taylor Swift fans, but it's like when Taylor Swift releases the same album, but like in different variations for different countries and different times. It's just like, at this point, you just want my money and. I get it, but also like nothing, if there's nothing new in there, why am I gonna spend the money? I get it, but I think at a time of overconsumption, it is really important to, I'm on a book buying ban, so I don't buy books right now. I haven't for like the last year. And like Nicole said, like the Six of Crows, special edition, if it's special to you, that's amazing. But yeah, that's my long-winded answer. What about you? What do you think about it?
Yeah, I'm in the same camp where it has to be a series that is special enough to me to warrant buying it again.
Yeah.
A Song of Ice and Fire would be an example. There's a particular edition of those books that I've been eyeing for a while, but it's really expensive, so I'm holding off on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I used to want all the special editions of all the books, and that adds up very quickly.
It does.
One that I have is Dune. That's one of my favorites. I think it looks really nice. The one with like the colored pages and things like that.
Oh, cool.
And that one wasn't terribly expensive. I don't think it has like special content specifically. It's really more of a looker, but it also wasn't priced egregiously, so it was easy to pick those up because I like my books to match, and I didn't have a matching set of Dune, so it was all different versions of like Messiah and Children of Dune and
Oh,
whatnot.
cool.
So it was nice to have a uniform selection there.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I buy the collector's editions or the limited edition, whatever it is, it's usually a sign that it's a series that I really enjoyed. And one thing I can't stand though is like the exclusive chapters that are like you're literally missing out on part of the story if you don't buy a certain version. I think
Yes.
that's predatory, and that's not something I would ever do, or buy
Yeah.
really.
I agree.
But
I think,
no, sorry,
I
go ahead.
think it is. No, you're good. Going off of that, it's when you withhold, Barnes and Noble will do like, you only get this additional chapter, or this like whatever. If you go to Target, it's different. And that's when I'm like over that, because it's, you're not only pitting your consumers against one another, because like someone's gonna be like, I couldn't afford the $30 Barnes and Noble, so I went to Target and got the 25, but now I'm missing a piece of content. And on the internet, I know like on Reddit you can find like the scanned chapters, or like on Tumblr or something like that. But it just makes it starts to make it starts to make things inaccessible. And there's also a question of quality too. Like the quality of special editions, again, I'll say with the Holly Black one that I spent like $150 on, because it was like all four, including the little novella. I felt like it was worth that much money, because they are heavy. I mean, they're so heavy and thick, and the writing on the inside, all of it was just like so well done and like well bound. But I've seen so many TikToks of people getting like the special editions of newer Book Talk, Big Bangs, like Fourth Wing, and just being like, why is this so flimsy and thin and not quality? And that's also something too. It's like, I don't think I would ever go into writing this book with a special edition in mind. If there were enough people that were like, I love this, I want like a really nice, pretty version of this, then potentially. But I would have to them, like, it would have to be justifiable for me. Like, the quality would have to be top tier. Like, I would add stuff to it, right? I would get artists to be involved and like put more art in there that has never been seen, or like extra chapters from editing, whatever, just to make it like worthwhile, because rereading is fun, but if you're not really adding much else, it's like, okay, yeah. So,
Just gonna
anyway.
sit on the shelf and look nice. But
Right.
I think one of my favorite approaches, and I've seen a lot more book talkers, specifically in the indie space, embrace this, which I like seeing, is using Kickstarter to, one, gauge interest for special editions,
Yes.
and then also like have this with Kickstarter, you have like the stretch goals. So if we hit certain milestones, we
Yeah.
include more content. And a lot of these authors are really killing it with their Kickstarters, from what I've seen, like really offering valid reasons to pick these versions up without
Yeah.
becoming predatory, in my opinion. It's not like, well, you're not getting the whole story unless you buy the Kickstarter version. It's more like, thank you for supporting the special edition. Here's all this art and behind the scenes stuff. Like, here's the early draft of this chapter. It's all really cool.
Yeah.
I think one of my mutuals, I'm not sure if you follow her, but EC Garrett, she did one recently on Book Talk. She's been seeing a lot of popularity with her books recently, and hers was funded in like a day, and
No
it was
way.
awesome. And it's a gorgeous looking book already, but the special edition is just
That's
that much
so
better.
cool.
So I really like the Kickstarter approach. I think that it gauges the interest, and then it's a nice way to reward people who contribute to it. And I really like that. I think even Brandon Sanderson has
Yeah.
done Kickstarters before, even though he's not in the indie space, but
It rewards people for being interested, but also makes them feel like they are a part of the process of like helping someone that they really enjoy the content of getting published. Like, if that's your barrier to entry, which it almost always is for most of us, then yeah, of course, like a Kickstarter that's community funded, like the book becomes so much bigger than just the author writing and putting it out. It becomes like, this is a part of our whole community, and like people want this. And that's usually the hardest component of self-publishing, is like gauging interests, or seeing who's going to be, or who's going to want to spend that much money. So yeah, it's really cool. I hadn't even really thought about the Kickstarter. That kind of, yeah, that changes Yeah, that's something to think about.
Yeah.
That was a good question.
Yeah, the Kickstarter is really opens up a lot of possibilities. Also, hello
Yeah.
to Kat and my girlfriend, who
Hi,
seems to have joined again.
Kat.
Okay. Sorry, did you have a follow-up for the special editions, or did we kind of touch on it already?
I think we touched on it, yeah, just like price and stuff, but yeah, we can move on.
Okay. So next up, we're going to talk a little bit about series length. This is something that I feel like I might have. I don't know if it would be considered controversial, but I have some strong opinions on.
Okay.
So when it comes to how many books are in a series, first and foremost, as a reader, do you have any preferences in that regard, or will you read anything from a standalone to a 50-book continuous series?
Okay. I actually don't have a solid answer for this. There are book series that are intimidating to me to like Terry Pratchett's Discworld series. Like, I think we mentioned that a few episodes back. It's like 40 plus books in this series. That's intimidating. But that also is just like not just about the same characters, right? It reaches out and farther than the original few books. So that's kind of intimidating. A lot of, I mean, Brandon Sanderson's sometimes I'm like, we are waxing poetic about this. We need to move on, like, whatever. But so I think standalones can be tricky, but I did put on my 2024 ins for Book Talk this year that there need to be better standalones. And so far this year, the two advanced copies of standalone books I got were perfect. It was just the right length, it was just the right amount of intrigue and plot that I was like, this is a perfect standalone. I will not say no to like a seven book series. Obviously, Harry Potter set me up for this, but Sarah J. Maas, the Her Throne of Glass series, loved, and that was seven books. People think that it could have been shorter. I liked it. I don't have a preference. I do think that some people push too hard. Again, Sarah J. Maas and her A Court of Thorns and Roses series, I think didn't need to be as long as it is or as it was slash is. Know when to stop. It's like any type of franchise. Once people see the money roll in, sometimes they get a little overzealous and the plot gets lost. So it genuinely just depends. I think I'm a middle, I like a three book series. Even if they're bigger threes, like chunky boys and girls, I'll take it. I'm a good three in the middle, but I won't say no to a larger series if I really, really love it. So yeah. What about you? You said you had controversial thoughts on this. I'm excited to hear
I
them.
don't know if they're controversial. I just feel like they might be. So I'm very, very picky about the series that I'll pick up, based on series length, just because the time investment. So, standalone's perfectly fine. It's a single book. A trilogy, I think that's like pretty universally accepted as like
Yeah,
this is a
solid.
great format to tell a story in. Not that it fits every story, but it fits a lot of them. So trilogies don't throw me off at all. I think that's perfect for what most authors are trying to do. And then I'm also fine with, up to seven if it fits the story. I think there's more expansive stories like you said, Harry Potter. There's A Song of Ice and Fire, which I know is unfinished, but it's supposed to be seven. And I like, for example, you couldn't do that in three books. So I think it makes sense when some series get get up to like seven. When I start to take issue is when I see the tens, the 14s, the 20 plus, like that's when I'm like, okay, I probably am not gonna get into this, just because when I think about that, I'm gonna give the one that I am most intimidated by, and that's the Wheel of Time.
Oh, dude.
I hear great things about Wheel of Time, but I just cannot bring myself to commit to a 14 book series. I would love to be a part of the Wheel of Time fan base, but I from what I hear, even the fan base acknowledges that there's like almost entire books of filler here.
Yes,
And
they say like it doesn't get good until like book five, and I'm like, why am I going to invest my time in reading like the I have the first Wheel of Time, and I got halfway through, and I was like, you're telling me I need to read five 500 page books to start to really get into it? I don't see. I'm sure I will eventually with all of my free time in the future that I have, but yeah, it is, you're 100% right. It's a lot. It is so much.
Yeah, that's where I start to struggle is when it's, when it's that long, I feel like it doesn't need to be 99% of the time. And again, I'm not saying Wheel of Time is bad. I haven't read it. I'm sure it's great, and by the time you get to the end, I'm sure you've enjoyed the journey. It's just to me, when I think, do I want to read 14 different books? That's like five different trilogies that I have sitting on my bookshelf that I could read, or I could read this one series. So it's like I would love to get to Wheel of Time one day, but it is so far at the bottom of my list of things to read that I don't know that I ever will. And that's strictly because of how long it is. Like, it's a massive time investment. I
It
will
really
say
is.
I have seen some 10 book series that I feel like, from what I hear, they do handle their length pretty well for the most part. So 10 might not be terrible. It's still a big investment to me, and it's still a lot more intimidating than a 3 or 7 book series.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, once you go over 10, it's, for me,
You're
it's
like,
probably a no-go zone just because I don't have that
Yeah.
kind of time, unfortunately.
No, I'm fully with you there. I think I also, as you were talking about the 10 booker kind of scenario, it also has to be the correct genre. And when I say that, obviously I'm someone who just primarily reads fantasy, but I do dabble in sci-fi every now and then. But the romantasy stuff, like a few authors, Jennifer Armentrout is one of them, who just kind of like puts out a lot of books in the same universe with the same characters, and it's like the plot is so heavily romance that I can't do five romantasy books about the same. Like, I just, it stop, it becomes really boring to me. I don't obviously care if there's romance or like, sexual content, but like, I'm a plot reader. I gotta be in it for the plot. And if your story is mostly just around like miscommunication because people are soulmates, I'm kind of like, I don't really I don't care about that at all. So genre plays an important part in that as well.
So actually on the same topic, I didn't even touch on the writing side of that because I got so into the my opinion as a reader. As a writer, what do you think about like series length? Do you have like a hard number that you wouldn't go past? Like I mean I it, mine kind of correlates to what I said with reading. Like three, cool. Seven, maybe. Beyond that, I don't think I would ever be able to write. I would definitely wrap it up much sooner than that. So that's where I stand on that. But where are you?
No, I'm right there with you. I think right now for A Filthy Hunger or the overarching trilogy, I'm sticking to three because I feel like that's just a solid, I'm not going to lose anybody really. But I think the trilogy title is The Book of Witnesses. So there's like the first Book of Witnesses, the second Book of Witnesses, and the third. Yeah, I think three is good. Three is the magic number. That's again my where I sit in the middle. I'm like, that's a good amount. I'm okay if they get thicker as they get, as they move on. That's usually the norm anyway. But yeah, I think I can really, as a baby writer, can only really project a three book series without it becoming like redundant, unless something happens in the publishing moment where it's like, actually, we could do that. I do have like the potential for novellas, or like prequels. That's always an option for me. I can absolutely just write forever and ever about the world that my stuff exists in. But at this point in time, it's just three. And then if it's big enough and people like it enough, I could 100% do offshoots of it. But yeah, three, 100%. I can't even wrap my rat like 10, 7. No. Crazy.
You did mention an important, I guess, stipulation, or I don't know if that's the right word for it, but that I should mention is when I say those longer series are more intimidating to me, and I probably won't dive into them. I don't mean stuff that's like there's one trilogy in this world, and then there's another trilogy, and there's a couple prequels and spin-offs. I think that's different. I'm talking about when like
Oh, yeah.
the mainline series itself is that long. Because what like
Yeah.
First Law, for example, which is something I'm taking a break from it right now, but I'm currently reading. It's got the first trilogy has three books. Then there's Age of Madness, which also has three. There's three standalones, and then I think there's like two anthologies. To me, that's a lot
Yeah.
more digestible because each thing is its own
Yes.
contained story. You don't have to read the rest, right? It's like if you want
Right.
more of this, then you can go get it. But
Yeah. No, I
yeah.
was following you. I'm on the same group of people for 10 books train. I'm like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's hard. And that's, I think that's why, like, and I brought this up earlier, but like Discworld is fun for people because you can pick and choose what chunks to read and they all kind of like interweave together. That's not a word, but they all work together. So if it's just like 40 books about the same people, that's insanity,
Right.
So yeah, I completely agree. I think novellas are fun and like offshoots of side characters' quests and stuff. That's always a good time.
Well, did you have any follow-ups for that topic before we move forward to the next, or?
Okay, I have like one quick follow-up.
Yeah.
For when you're writing Knight of Knives and like thinking about the future, or when you're reading a multi-book series, what is the threshold for you or the trigger that makes you go, I'm getting tired. I'm getting tired of this series, or I can't go any further. Does that question make sense?
Yeah, I get. I think
Okay, cool.
so. I think for me, it's like if I'm making significant progress in a book, and I think I might have developed a more or more patience for this, I guess, after reading First Law, just because it does start off really slow.
Sure.
If I get through the majority or an entire book, and I feel like that book did not advance the plot at all. Like, I can't remember what happened. I don't know why I read this. Like,
Yeah.
if I
Okay.
look at book three or books 1 to 3, and I can tell you what happens in those. And then I look at book four and I'm like, I don't know. That's a sign to me that nothing important happened.
Sure.
Which I've heard is the case with some of these longer series. So ultimately for me, if I'm starting to feel like I'm looking forward to being done with the book for like the wrong reasons, and I can't tell you what's
Yeah.
happening, that's usually a sign to me that I should probably put it to rest for now, or that it's getting too long for its own good.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great threshold. It is. It's like you got to keep your attention. And I know a lot of books go through like a second book slump, which is, kind of what no author wants, but your story is going to ebb and flow. There are going to be slow
Right.
points. But yeah, if you like finish a book and you're like, I couldn't really tell you what happened in this and I don't really care, that's a good indicator that it's time to at least take a break.
And that's kind of my approach with writing too. Like when it comes to as I'm outlining chapters or writing the chapters, if I feel the same way, if I feel like it's not moving the plot forward and I honestly can't tell you what the purpose of this chapter is, I'll probably cut it. A Knight of Knives was originally planned to be the first book in a trilogy. I have since scaled that back to a duology right now after
Nice.
outlining both books, just because I felt like
Yeah.
book two felt a lot more filler and like I was really just trying to make it a trilogy. And so
Yeah.
I didn't want to do that. I think it's a story that can be told in two books, and
Nice.
that's what I'm going to try to do. Obviously these things change, sometimes new ideas come
You never
in
know.
and it may
Yeah.
end up being three books again, but for now the plan is two, and the way I approach it as a writer is pretty much the same way I approach it as a reader.
I think that's some good advice there. Yeah. Filler is fun for fan fiction, but not for a book series, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right,
Cool.
well, on to our writing topics. I know some of those were kind of writing topics, but
They were.
we do have our weekly work in progress check-in. Ash, how is your writing going?
Well, it seems like we're kind of on the same trajectory here, which is good. So
Yeah.
I've been trying to write at least a paragraph for both projects, both A Filthy Hunger and the untitled short story for the anthology. And I've gotten between both of them about 1,000 this week, which I
Very
will
cool.
take.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
Awesome. I'm actually right around the 1,000 words mark too.
Nice.
I delete a lot and then rewrite a lot, so I'm not sure. Like, sometimes it's hard to say what is my actual word count, but
Yes, I
yeah,
feel that.
so slow but steady progress, starting to find more time to
Love it.
write, which is good. So hopefully we
Nice. Love to hear it.
maybe we'll hit a higher number next week, who knows?
Fingers crossed.
All right. The first weekly writing topic I have for us is co-authoring or collaborative writing. This is not something I've ever explored before, but I do know some people on BookTok who are really into writing with like a partner.
Yeah.
So I just kind of wanted to gauge your thoughts. Is that something I know some people kind of feel strongly like one way or the other, or they just know it's something that would work for them or it wouldn't. So where do you kind of fall with collaborative writing? And you can go into that as much as you want. I know the anthology is like kind of collaborative, but you're at the same time
Yeah.
you're responsible for your own stories. So feel free to digest, or I lost the word I was going for there, but feel free
No, you're
to
good.
explore
I'll
all
wax
avenues
poetic about
there.
this. Sure. Yeah, so Kat is right. Holly Black has co-written with a few of her fellow authors. I enjoy a book or a book series co-written. I know, Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett wrote Good Omens, and I loved that. Like again, Holly Black. And I think Cassandra Clare and a couple others. But I enjoy a good co-written book, especially when I can't tell which author is speaking, like throughout the entire thing. It feels like an actual collaboration between two people rather than just like one person's voice popping up and another person's voice popping up. The downside to that is that like it's a very fine line to walk. It's obviously when you're an established author and you have people to help you, you can catch that early on. For self-published, I don't think I have seen anyone, at least people I follow, unless I am mistaken, who have co-written anything. I would be interesting, interesting. I would be interested to read something from like a really small indie or self-published author in that camp because I'm not against it. And I'm curious to see how much like having a full-time editor or a publishing house behind you, how that changes the dynamic, if it does at all. I also think this is going to be like, of course, obviously, but I think collaborative writing is something that every author does. I ask Kat all the time for feedback on things, and we share ideas, and I help her, and we go back and forth. So let us preface this by saying writing is a collaborative event, even if it is just one author, you know. Co-authoring, though, I don't think I could do. I have way too many issues with letting go of control. You know what I mean? Also, I feel a little too protective over my characters. If it was a story idea that came out of a collaboration with somebody else, and it was something we completely came up together, potentially, but that would be really hard. That would be extremely hard for me to do. Not against it. If anyone were to be like, hey, I like your writing, can we explore co-writing something together? I would never say no off the bat, but it would be a very good exercise, I guess. That's a polite and nice way to say it, in letting go of creative control over something. I got into, Kat says, I mean, I got into writing by RPing, which is kind of the same thing. Yeah, I mean, that is like an almost like an in, like a live kind of back and forth, which can be really helpful. I guess I mean more of like creating the framework and agreeing over world building and who takes control at what point, and you know, it can be, yeah, it could just be a challenge, one that I've never really experienced or had a hand in before. So it's a really good question. What about you?
I'm definitely of the same mind as you, where when it comes to the things that I create, I am very controlling and different. Like, I don't want to let go of that control because I want my voice to be present in the things that I'm creating. So I think
Yeah.
largely when it comes to like my own original ideas, those will probably always just be me.
Sure.
If it were something that came out of a collaboration, like you said, like the idea itself was kind of collaborative, I feel like I'd be more open
Yeah.
to something like that. But again, it's just that, like you said, there's a fine line that you have to walk with things like that. Like when it comes to how do you author, how do two different authors mesh together? Hello,
Yeah.
Pirate Captain Seth.
Hi.
But yeah, it's something that I think I would be really cautious about bringing myself into, just because I am someone who likes to have creative control. And
Yeah.
when you share that with another person, I feel like, there's a certain, I don't know, you have to have a certain connection with that person to really
Yeah,
create
I
something
agree.
special there, I think. Hey, Seth,
Yeah.
finally caught one of my lives. Yeah, great to see you.
No, I agree.
I kind of lost my train of thought there, but
No, but yes, I fully agree with you there. The collab piece is interesting, but yeah, it's a challenge to let go. Even if it is something that you create together, you kind of it's easy to just like fall into those roles, I think. And in a co-authorship, you have to be willing to like be flexible with all of it. Yeah, and unless you know the person really, really well, I think that's like another component too, is that
Right.
most people who co-author stuff are very close already.
And that's important.
So I think as long as that foundation of understanding and like, okay, like with you and I with the podcast, it's just like, okay, like as long as we're open and honest about things, then it's gonna go a lot smoother. But that's
Yeah.
still a challenge. It's still hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To your point too, I do know a few people on BookTok that are in the indie self-published space that have co-authored or are doing that. So I'll give him a shout out real quick. I believe
Yeah.
I think I'm saying his I always think I'm saying his name wrong, but Seth will correct me, I think, on this one. Mikkel or Michael Malwassel. I believe he has a co-author. He wrote Paragon
Oh, neat.
Exordium. And then Mandy, who I am in a Discord with, and she shows up in our chat sometimes.
Yeah.
She has a co-author as well that she works with very closely.
Oh,
So
cool.
I have not had a chance to, it's pronounced Michael. Okay, that's good to know. I'll have to make a note in my phone for the next time I say his name. But yeah, they both seem to really enjoy that process, so I'd be curious to hear more from them on how that works
Yeah.
in like an indie space. And I haven't had a chance to read either of their books yet, as much as I want to. But yeah, definitely would be interested to see how that
Yeah, we'll
impacts
have to
things
have.
like tone and voice and whatnot.
Right. Yeah, we'll have to have like a co-author duo on when we
Right.
start doing interviews with people, because that would be super fascinating. I
Yeah.
have so many questions.
All right. Next up, we have, I labeled it, Where Does a Story Start for You? Stories come to us in many different ways, but some of us kind of develop, patterns or habits or trends in this. So, have you noticed any in your own writing process, like as far as how you develop ideas and how you decide what stories to develop further or explore? Or is it just kind of chaotic? I know it can, people fall into both camps there, so.
Yeah. A story actually sounds like so pretentious, and I really don't mean it to sound this way. It is not as fancy, but most of mine have always like come from dreams that I've experienced. And I can't really speak to like why that happens, but I tend to like wake up and just be like absolutely shook by the dream I've just had, and then
Yeah.
like, oh my God. And they're usually just the kernels of something, and that's kind of what happened with A Filthy Hunger. It's a very different story than how the dream occurred back in the day, but the aesthetic and the theme of it kind of at its core has stayed the same. There's another one, and it's more of like a sci-fi concept that I've had also for like years and years and years. And I woke up, and I don't know if you've ever experienced a dream where you've like lived a life, like a full life, but it's like not
Oh,
you
yeah.
that you know what I mean? And you like
Yeah.
kind of wake up like really bereft and sad that like feel like, oh my God, like I've just lived a whole life, like my children and my house, whatever. But so I had one that was really similar, and I like went through this an entire crazy experience, and I like woke up and was like, holy crap, that's like a phenomenal way to start a story. So usually the kernels start there. And then I kind of go from there. I'm a really aesthetic person. I like aesthetic. I like it has to s my Pinterest boards are very much like very closed parameters of what something needs to look like or feel like. So yeah, as long as it stays within that, I take that kernel and just kind of move with it. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not crazy, I promise, but dreams are prophetic.
I wish my dreams were as, I guess, as productive, but they don't usually turn into stories for me. Sometimes I will get like a solution to a something I'm struggling with in a story in a dream. That happens. But I don't, not very many
I want to be
story ideas
clear.
start with the dream.
Yeah, I want to be clear that this happens like once in a decade. Like, it's not a very, it's not, I'm not like waking up every day being like, wow, what an amazing idea. I've got to write this down. It's like these happen very rarely. So I'm not just like spewing out dreams. Most of the time, I don't really remember mine. So when I do, I'm like, oh, there we go. Yeah. What about you? Where do stories start for you, Brandon?
As far as where they come from, I couldn't tell you at all, to be honest.
That's okay.
That random, chaotic, no patterns, no discernible patterns there. As far as what I like to start, thinking about and developing first, it's almost always the characters for me, because I'm someone who's very like all my I like the character driven stories. I like A Song of Ice and Fire is my favorite, so I like to focus on that aspect of my stories first and see if these characters are people that I can spend time writing about for a long period of time. And then, if I feel like I've got something interesting there, then I kind of have like key questions that I ask myself along the way to decide if I'm going to keep exploring this idea further or not. And I kind of just go from there. So it usually starts with characters. Next thing I'll try to come up with from there is setting. So where are these characters going to be? The plot usually comes along between those, like as I'm fleshing out the characters and what their journeys are going to be like, the plot is already in my head because it coincides with that. So yeah, I like to start with the characters, because that's for me, that's like the most important thing. And then when I'm deciding what ideas to explore, I did want to ask you this follow-up as well, but when I'm deciding what ideas to explore and develop further, the questions I ask myself are, has this been done before? If it has, what can I bring to the conversation or to this genre that is going to add value or be different enough, right? Like if I feel like someone's done what I want to do well enough already, I won't usually touch it. It's I like to I want to provide something new and something that I feel like hasn't been done before to a certain extent, right? Like when it comes to A Knight of Knives, I don't know a lot of fantasy murder mysteries. I know there are a few that I really like, but it seems to be a pretty sparse subgenre still. And also within that subgenre, I feel like I do have enough unique ideas to explore and kind of a unique take on the whole, like on the whole murder mystery genre itself. So that's kind of how I decide to develop that further. And if I can't get that far, then I'll usually shelve the idea. I had
Interesting. So do you find that that limits you though by, and this is just my own curiosity. Do you find that worrying or at least considering if this has been done before limits your ability to flesh out an idea fully, like almost like starting it before it can get anywhere or change as you progress?
It definitely can. I try not to be like, it depends on how far you take that, I guess. Like what are you asking has been done before, right? Like, am I asking if there's been fantasy murder mysteries? Well, yeah, so there has been as I don't think there's as many as I would like to read, but it's still been done.
Sure.
So that's kind of why I have those follow-ups, like, okay, what can I do to put a unique spin on this? And
Interesting.
how can I bring something new, I guess, to this story subgenre or whatever it is I'm trying to explore? And if I can't give an answer to that, that's kind of when I step back and I'm like, this idea either needs more time to develop and I need to work on it some more, or maybe it's just not worth exploring right now just because
Yeah.
I would get bored of writing it, to be honest, if I felt like
Oh,
I
interesting.
could just go read it somewhere else. So yeah, I like to, as much as I can, I like to bring something new or something unique to the table, right?
Yeah, that's so fascinating because I think I'm a little bit opposite, which is very rare for us to have this, like,
It is.
not necessarily like on the same page, which is great. I find that really interesting because, I love, just like you said, like you love reading where available fantasy murder mysteries, right? And that subgenre is not as strong, or at least not as prevalent in the fantasy genre. I love just kind of like, not that I don't enjoy variety, but I tend to stick to very similar tropes and themes in the next book that I pick up and then the book after that. I obviously add variety, but for me, I think with like A Filthy Hunger, it's I'm taking the themes of what I really love and just adding to it, or adding to the genre itself. And while I do obviously want to make sure I stand out and I push different things, like the religious aspect of my story is very heavy. I feel like the gods themselves very much play an extreme role in the story, and at least in the books that I read, they tend to be a bit, they take a step back, or they're just like the big climax is them meeting a god, but not necessarily. So I do try and like add things that I don't see very often, but I don't worry necessarily about whether or not it's been done before to the extent that you do. That actually terrifies me, that because it's like obviously it's been done before, right?
Yeah,
Like we all build
everything
off
has
of what
been.
we read. Yeah. So I and that's just my own anxiety and my own like imposter syndrome kind of appearing. It's just like, oh, like I know though that there are books that have done this before. Okay, but then like why am I writing this then? And so I don't necessarily follow that train of thought. It's more of just like what really is just like what gets me like sweaty with excitement when I think about my book. Okay. If this idea gets like my heart racing and immediately makes me want to go write, then I follow that thread. So it's more of like a physical reaction, I guess, to answer your question in terms of like what ideas are worth exploring. And then like for example, yesterday I completely made up a new thing for the story and the world building, and I was like, genius, I'm going to follow this or else it has to be in this book, it has to be in here. So also sometimes it is just like a random like it wasn't even added in the outline, but then it just happened. And I'm like, now it's a part of this world. Huzzah! So, yeah. Does that make sense? Did any of that make sense? I hope
No, I always like when we do kind of diverge a little bit there because I feel like we're so
Yeah.
similar in a lot of ways, but that's very interesting because I always I'm
Yeah.
very much like not motivated to write if I feel like there's a dozen other stories out there that do what I want to do really
Yeah, that's
well.
so fascinating. Yeah.
Obviously, if you take that question at face value, has this been done before? The answer is always going to be yes, because there's just
Of
so many books
course.
out there. It's really just about like
Right.
that the follow-up, like, okay, what can I do to make this new and exciting and
Yeah.
ultimately to me worth writing? But yeah, that's interesting. So
Yeah.
for you,
That is
it's
interesting.
more of a physical
Yeah.
feeling when you get the idea that you know it's like it's something you want to pursue. Very cool.
I genuinely like that's so gross, but yeah, I get like sweaty and my heart starts to race and I'm just like, oh my God, yeah, okay. And then I kind of get lost in that. So it's less forethought, which I admire about you, that it's like, okay, like what you're thinking through it more holistically versus me, where it's just kind of like, I'm chasing the cat. Like, let's just go, let's do this. So yeah. Well, hell yeah, I like when we don't necessarily align because we do so often.
And yeah, Seth makes a good point. Most events that happen to real people aren't unique either. Yeah, so it's
That's true.
and unique combinations make unique events. It's their reactions that create a unique chain. Yeah, totally.
No, fully agree.
So you can totally take something that's been done to death and still do that really well in a way that's like new and exciting. It's just I would feel a lot more intimidated doing that, I feel like. But I still do look for the familiar. You know, there are certain things I like in my reading that I'm going to carry forward
Sure.
into my writing. It's not like I'm trying to do something that has literally never been seen before, and people are
Right.
like, "What the f-" when they read my
What the
book.
hell?
But
Yeah.
yeah, just unique enough that I feel like it's worth pursuing.
Totally. Yeah, I completely understand. That was a good question.
I think we explored the follow-up a little bit too, so I'm gonna move on to the next topic if that's all right with you.
Okay, yeah, totally.
So this is kind of the flip side to the question we just talked about, which is where does a story start for you? This one might be a little bit more difficult to answer since we're both working on our debuts still at the moment, but how do you decide where a story's going to end now that we've covered the beginnings? And also, do you find the like planning the ending versus the beginning easier one way or the other? Or just give me your thoughts on story endings and how you handle them in general, even though I know we're both still
Okay.
writing.
So I'm gonna ask a follow-up question for you real quick before I give you my answer. Do you know the ending to A Knight of Knives?
I do, and I don't think it's going to change.
Okay, yes, I'm the same way. I very often, as soon as I started to work on A Filthy Hunger, I already kind of knew how it needed to end, right? It's not necessarily wanted, it was just what in my gut aligned best. And I find that to be almost like a relief to know the ending personally, because I know what I need to do to get there, right? Because it's not going to change regardless of what happens in the middle. We have to get to the point where those things occur and align. And I find that to be very helpful. Same with the anthology short story. I actually knew the ending before I knew the beginning in this instance, only because, unlike A Filthy Hunger, this did not come from a dream. I did just kind of like work on concepts and then was like, okay, well, you know. But yeah, I think for me, the ending, it I have to, I like bittersweet endings. So I knew, or I know most of mine have to end that way. Only because I find it more compelling when a character or a group of characters really has to go through it or give something up and still find happiness, but it feels heavy, right? I think that's a very realistic experience for most of us and, you know, what we've gone through in our own lives. So, yeah, as long as it's a bittersweet ending, I tend to know what's going to happen and how to get there. I'm okay with it shifting. Like some ideas and some concepts with A Filthy Hunger's ending, I'm like, okay, I can fiddle around with this, but in terms of the finality of a thing, I also don't, we were talking about series and like offshoots of book series earlier, but I don't want there to be any doubt that there's going to be like a potentially second series with the same characters. It's done. Like done is done. We have seen these people on their journey. We have done the thing, and this is, they finally get to rest. They don't have to go through it anymore. So yeah, what about you? Do you usually know the end before you write, or does that come after, but you're solid? It sounds like you're pretty like, I know.
For those of you who are just joining us, that's TikTok's alert just to make sure we're awake. I guess I don't know what it is. It just happens every live. But yeah, also real quick, Seth says whatever is going to be the most dramatic. Yeah, that drama definitely plays a factor, a major one into
Yes.
the endings that I plan. Sorry, Ash, my brain got distracted by the
That's
TikTok alarm
okay.
sound. Could you repeat your follow-up question to me?
Yes. So my question was, do you usually know your ending as you start writing? It sounds though that you're very firm with your endings and there's like not a lot of movement around them when you do come to that realization.
Yeah, to be honest, I've been kind of vocal about this before. The middle of a story is the hardest for me, even if I know what's going to
Yeah.
happen. It's just the hardest for me to write. A lot of times before I've even written, like, I don't want to say the first chapter, but because sometimes that does happen, but usually before I start writing, I will have a general idea of where the story is going to end. And I just find for me that works best because if I'm trying to get to a destination, I need to know where that is. Like, I can't write towards
Sure.
an ending if
Right.
I don't know what it's going to be.
Exactly.
I like to know the beginning and the end before I sit down to start writing. I can make stuff up in the middle and shift it around as I need to, but
Yeah.
the endings very rarely change for me. I have a lot of the ending of A Knight of Knives written right now. It's the middle part that I've been very vocal about struggling with.
Yeah.
But as far as like the beginning and the end, those are basically done.
Sure.
So
Yeah,
it's,
they're bookends.
yeah,
You know,
it's,
it's like, yeah.
yeah. So I find endings, and I don't know if this is like crazy to any fellow writers, but I find endings to be one of the easiest things to do or to plan and to write. Just because I usually have that pretty well figured out, and I'm usually
Yeah.
pretty settled on it before I've even written too far into a given story.
Yes. Yeah. No, I fully agree. I think it's usually comes right after the beginning. You just, yeah, I don't think I've really met a writer, and I'd be interested to know in the chat if anyone else differs on this, if they don't write the ending and they kind of just let it flow and then come out with the ending only because I like it to definitely be a surprise too. Like I don't want it to be predictable in any way. If there are some cliches in the middle, that's fine. But yeah, I want the ending to be like, oh, and I kind of want people to cry at the end. So I've got to know. I've got to know how to get there. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
So
I
anyway.
definitely share the affinity for the bittersweet endings as well, probably because we both
Yeah.
enjoyed dark fantasy very much. But
Yeah.
yeah, those
Shocker.
expect the same from me, maybe even sometimes leaning more towards the bitter end, but we'll see. Yeah, endings are, I think I had a follow-up question for that, but no, I guess we touched on everything with that, but did you have any follow-ups for to ask about story endings? Seth also loves bittersweet
Don't
endings.
think
No
I,
surprise
yeah,
there.
I think that's some people like happy endings, and I'm, you know, it can be happy because it's like, yeah, you don't want to just, in my opinion, you want there to be a payoff at the
Right.
end, a good payoff. You have drug your poor readers through it, and your characters have gone through it, better or worse. And so, in my opinion, there does need to be a satisfaction at the end where
Right.
it's like all of this pain, all of this chaos, or whatever you include is worth this. That's one of my least favorites, is when I like get through it and it's still just like a miserable ending for everybody, and you're kind of like,
Yeah.
oh. I mean, no offense to J.R.R. Martin, but sometimes you're kind of like, oh, we went through three books and it just ended poorly. Oh God. But also that's his MO. I get it. You wanna, it's kind of like grim dark stuff. But anyway, yeah, it's got a, yeah. Pompeii. You know, I never actually watched that. It's with Kit Harington in it, right?
I
I
was
think
gonna
it was
say, didn't Kit
Lindsay
Harrington do a
Harrington.
Pompeii movie? I guess
Yeah.
he must
I think
have,
so,
but
yeah.
I didn't see it. Now I'll have, maybe I'll watch that tonight. I don't have anything to do tonight, so thanks for the movie,
Well, I think we
Rexon.
all know. I think we all know how it ends. So I'm
What?
sure it's very sad. Wait. Then don't watch it. Don't watch it. No, I'm just kidding.
Spoiler.
Spoiler alert. No, I don't have any follow-ups on that one. Those were two very good questions that bookend each other.
Yeah, I thought that was fun to explore, kind of like we did the protagonists and antagonists, even though I think we split that
Yeah.
up. But I liked when the topics can tie
I
in
like that.
together like that. You're telling me they
Oh
don't
God,
make it
just
out.
like Rogue One.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Okay, well, I guess we can move on to our weekly writing resources before we wrap up.
Yeah.
Ash, it looks like you have a pretty cool one this week, so I'll let you go ahead and share that with the chat.
I know, sorry I put mine first. I didn't even realize that
No, you're
until
totally
too
fine.
late. Okay. So my weekly writing resource, I have one this week, unlike last week because I was a bad co-host. It is the Novel Factory's 150 plus question questionnaire. It's a character questionnaire with over 150 questions to ask about your character. The overall website is really helpful. It has a bunch of other resources, including like a world building questionnaire and a character archetype definition page. It's got a lot of fun stuff. But as you are a character driven writer, and I obviously have very strong characters in mind, sometimes it can be challenging for those who are new to writing character driven stories or are just starting off with their stories to not really know that much about their character, or as their writing start to feel disconnected. So it can be a really good tool, super useful to just kind of like, what don't I know about my own character? And it's like, when's their birthday, if that,
Yeah.
applies. What's their favorite color? Silly questions like that, but it can actually really help once you start diving into scenarios where you're wondering how they would react. Yeah, so 150 plus questions to get to know your own character by the Novel Factory. That's
Very cool.
mine.
Yeah, I'll have to check that one out as someone who does not always know all the answers to the questions about their characters. That'll
Me
help me
either.
come prepared. Seth says, I'm gonna have to look into or lean into beta readers to know if the end of my series is too much. Yeah, that's interesting. I
Ooh.
want so Seth, if you know, I know we're not interviewing you, but if you don't mind me asking,
Yeah.
how much is that going to affect the ending, I guess? Like
Oh,
it, do, could
ooh.
you see yourself making major changes if you got like a lot of pushback there, or do you think you would kind of stick to your guns a
Stick
little
with
bit?
it.
You have two endings
Yeah.
planned.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Okay.
That's very cool.
Okay. That is really fascinating. That would just an interim to go off of Brandon's question to Yusuf, but we are eventually going to do interviews, and I think it's a really good question to ask anyone in the future, like in terms of endings and plot wise, like if a bunch of people say, I hate this, do you change it or do you stick to what you love? But two endings is interesting.
So what you do, Seth, is you publish both and you tell people if they don't like ending A, they can read ending B.
It's a choose your own storyline novel at the end of the day. You just kind of like go one way or the other. But no, that's
Yeah.
crazy.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm curious to see. I'm enjoying the Eldritch Depths. I'm a little behind. I didn't get to publish my arc review, but fantastic series for those who have not read it. And I'm sure everyone here in chat has had a chance to take a look at it, but yeah,
That's a good
I
idea too, to put it on your Substack. Like if you go with one way, but then be like, here's the original ending I wanted, but after much deliberation and yelling, I chose to go with a different one.
yeah. Well, I'll share my weekly writing resource for everybody.
Yes, please
So
do.
this I actually just discovered this one recently. This is a website called autocrit.com. It is an AI-driven program that analyzes your writing, kind of like you would get from a developmental editor. It gives you insight into things like how you're managing plot threads, pacing, foreshadowing, and then something that I thought was really cool, it can even help you spot like contradictions or plot holes. So if you've like said one thing but then you contradict yourself later, it's going to pick up on that. And
Whoa.
I did make sure. As I was looking at this, since it's an AI-driven tool, they do not train their AI on your writing, so they don't like store it in there and everything. You're good to go. You
Love
can
that.
rest easy knowing that they're not gonna steal your novel from you. And they do have a free option for those who want to like try it out before you subscribe. And the subscription
Yeah.
is, I think it's $30 if you do the monthly, but you save 50% if you do annual. And it looks really cool. I'm
Okay.
definitely gonna try it out. I really appreciate like
That's
the
sick.
ethical use of AI where it's not trained on your data. So
Yeah.
yeah, it sounds like a really cool tool. And seems like it would be really helpful, especially in while you're writing, to kind of get that developmental feedback maybe early on and
Yeah.
then help you polish the story as you go. But yeah,
No, that's
definitely gonna check
phenomenal.
that one out.
Oh, great find, Brandon. Love that. I think that's my favorite so far.
Yeah, sometimes I find a cool one.
Me too. I
All
don't
right.
doubt you.
Sometimes I doubt myself when I'm looking at the resources. It is here, I'm gonna put it in the chat. I just realized I can type. It is autocrit. I don't know if I can put links, so I'm gonna sneak past the filter here. Autocrit.com. And yeah, definitely check that one out. A similar tool
It
I
sounds like
found
a
is called like Pro Writing Aid. I just don't know if it has all the same features. Sorry, you said it sounds like what?
No, just like it sounds like a oh, this is a major crit hit to my character in D&D, just
Oh,
like
yeah.
automatic crit. But anyway, that was just a silly comment.
All right. Well, that is all our topics for the week, but we do have a few people with us, so I'm gonna open the floor to chat. Do you guys have any questions, any suggested topics you'd like us to cover in another week on the
Yeah.
podcast? Any feedback? I like to say now is not the time to tell me you couldn't hear me for the whole stream. Please do that at the beginning if that happens, but it sounds like you can all hear me, so.
Yeah, Nate. Glad we're on the same wavelength with the D&D.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we can also update people, the few that are in here. We will not be going live next week. I will be out of
That's
town,
right.
and also it's the 4th of July, so you know. Oh yeah, we actually did mention this earlier. I think mine's playing for three. And I think yours, Brandon, is a duology, correct? As of right now.
Yeah, so originally I had planned for A Knight of Knives to be book one in a trilogy, and that's since been changed to a duology. Just book two felt like too much filler to me, and I felt like the story is better told in two books. Obviously, that can change as we go. Book one's not out yet, so you know there's
Yeah.
still room for changing things there. Do you have any any characters that have created themselves out of nowhere? That's an
Yeah,
interesting one.
100%.
I do have
Yeah.
some that, yeah, they just kind of. I can't tell you where they came from, but
Just appeared.
they just fill a void that I feel like is
Yeah.
necessary in the story. That's happened a few times. I pretty much agree with
I
everything
was
this
going to
podcast.
say,
Love being here. We love having you, Nicole. You are our
thanks,
number one
Nicole.
cheerleader. Thank you so much for being here.
Yes.
Thank you to everyone else who was
Yeah.
here as well. Always nice to
Definitely.
have a live crowd.
Sorry, Brandon, I keep talking over you. I really
You're
don't
totally
mean
fine.
to. I just wanted to follow up with the characters that create themselves. It happens all the time. I almost like have to like shove a like into my graveyard folder like a bunch of people that I'm like, well, I'll probably never use them, but here's an idea.
That's
Also, a
cool.
podcast update. There will be an Instagram coming this week. So once we come up with that, we will let you guys know, and then you can follow for updates and hopefully share with people about the podcast. And then you can like ask us questions via that. And then we'll have an email too, so you can send us emails about questions or topics you want to talk about. So lots of fun things coming.
Yeah,
And that's all I have.
we're working on lots of exciting things to improve the podcast, from like quality and social media presence and all those things. So stay super excited to share those with you guys. Graveyard folder, I like that idea. Yeah, that reminded me of like, you know,
It's essential.
I don't know if you've played Magic the Gathering, but you know, your graveyard and that. I never thought to have a character graveyard for my writing, but that is cool.
Oh, totally. I would. That is like my number one biggest like advice to people is keep a graveyard folder. Do not delete anything. You never know what you delete that can be used later or for a different story. And
Yeah.
then just keep like a character graveyard, a sentence graveyard, a chapter graveyard. Like just keep everything. Do not delete
Yeah. I do have
anything.
like, if I delete a significant amount of like a paragraph or a chapter, I will save that. Maybe I don't really do it with sentences or characters, but I probably should.
I guess I mean more of like if it's a sentence that you love, but you're like, God, it just isn't working in this sense. Like, not just like she went to the bathroom. Like, obviously not. You're like, you don't care about that. But if it's like a banger sentence, but then you just edit and you're like, I got this, just doesn't fit. Graveyard.
Yeah, and then Seth says to put it on Substack. Yeah, I've seen what
Substack,
you've been
there you
doing with
go.
your Substack. I'm reading some of your posts on there. Very, very insightful, very cool. All
That's
right,
fun. Well, I think
well,
that's it, y'all.
yeah, that's gonna be all from us this week. Like we said, we are out next week, and we will let you guys know when we're picking back up, probably the week after, but we'll let you know for sure. As always, Ash, thank you for being my co-host. And thank you everyone for joining us, and I will see you guys all next time.
Bye. Thanks, Brandon. See you guys later.